Johnstown. Setting: three men and a woman lean over a body that is draped with a sheet, head to toe. A woman is holding a handkerchief to her nose to block the stench. One man carries a clipboard with papers and has a pen in the other hand. The second man holds a corner of the sheet up, and a third man looks under. The stench hung in the air. Clinging to the mountainsides as bacon grease saturates kitchens on Sunday mornings. The aroma is not mistaken, for only 5 days ago, God's vengeance visited this quaint city, nestled amongst the mountains of western Pennsylvania. Today is June 5th, 1889. The sun is shining brilliantly outside, and the temperature is unusually warm. There are no joyous picnics in the park. There are no spring lilies in the planters. Only soggy, mud-covered wreckage and rotting corpses decorate the streets and alleys. 5 days ago, a torrential downpour caused the old South Fork Dam on Lake Conemaugh to collapse. 20 million tons of water plummeted down the narrow valley of the Little Conemaugh toward unsuspecting Johnstown, a village located in a great hole surrounded by razorback ridges and some 450 feet down the rugged mountain valley. Boiling with huge chunks of debris, the wall of water grew at times to 60 feet high, tearing downhill at 40 miles per hour, leveling everything in its path. Thousands of people desperately tried to escape the wave. Those caught by the water found themselves swept up in a torrent of oily, muddy water, surrounded by tons of grinding debris, which crushed some, provided rafts for others. Many became helplessly entangled in miles of barbed wire from the destroyed wire works. In 10 minutes, the wave of water passed, leaving behind its destruction comparable only to the battlefields of 25 years prior. But for those unfortunates not caught up in the roaring, thunderous flow, the nightmare is just beginning. A corpse lies on the makeshift table near Grand View Cemetery. A stout man holds up a corner of the sheet covering the remains. He is John Fulton, general manager of Cambria Iron and Steel Company, major employer and manufacturer in the Conemaugh Valley. 9 short years ago, he inspected the South Fork Dam and declared it to be an accident waiting to happen. He wrote numerous reports clearly stating that the dam was not tall enough to contain the vast amounts of water behind it when spring thaws come. He noted that the spillway was clogged with shrubs, brush, and debris. Driving carriages over the dam is unsafe at any time, in his opinion. Allowing trees and other foliage to grow for mere aesthetic pleasure corroded the foundation of the earthen dam, as the roots eroded the very fabric and framework of the dam. His proposal to strengthen it had fallen on deaf ears. Too much money, was the cry from millionaires. The members of the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club were too busy with their extravagant lives. At the club above the dam, they paddled pleasure boats, fished the tantalizing lake waters, and hunted the expansive hills. Grand social events at the newly constructed clubhouse and private holiday parties at grand mansions advertised as cabins were the only concerns of the members. The elite socialites of the wealthy coal and steel magnates of Pittsburgh cared little for anything but temporal pleasures for themselves and their families. Among the club members were Andrew Carnegie, Henry Frick, and Andrew Mellon, gentlemen who believed that money could buy happiness and buy off troubles. Their secretive retreat in the mountains provided solace for their souls as they hid themselves from the plight of the common man and reveled in the companies of their peers. The wealthy families played at the expense of the sweat of the common man. They always had. They bought the land from the poor when money was scarce. The poor worked as household servants, factory workers, and farmhands for the rich. And now the carelessness of the rich was causing the death of thousands of the poor who lived in the valley below the neglected dam. Perhaps, in a moment of remorse or charity, the rich will give aid to help the poor. Perhaps it's not too late to reform. Perhaps it's not too late to make amends. Perhaps it's not too late to treat fellow humans with dignity. But to John Fulton, it is too late. He feels a heavy responsibility for the disaster. If only he would have been more vocal. If only it only made them listen. His eyes glaze over as the corpse's face is revealed. His soul is guilt-ridden, and his will to live is crushed. He tries hard to maintain composure as he looks under yet another sheet. You see, he fears his friend's wife and 4-year-old daughter are missing. He fears they are dead. They have not been seen since the flood. He fears the next corpse will be there, one of theirs. A gentle touch is felt on Fulton's shoulder. It's a woman's touch, but Fulton's eyes do not rise to see who is trying to comfort him. The woman is Clara Barton, a dynamic woman. She has won fame for her acts of mercy during the Civil War. Her humanitarian Red Cross organization has found its first major catastrophe here at Johnstown. She raced here with tents that will house the food distribution center, cots to provide sleeping quarters for the homeless, latrines to contain the spread of disease, and the first aid station to care for the injured and sick. A tireless worker, she organizes the practical aspects of providing aid to people who are too physically and emotionally tired to care for themselves or their families. She will diligently work to unite families, feed, clothe, and house every soul in need. But right now, Mr. Fulton has her full attention. It's no wonder that many call her an angel. The Reverend David Beale knows of angels too. As he peers into the mangled face that remains on the corpse, his heart sinks. As pastor of the largest church in Johnstown, he feels it is his responsibility to tend to his flock, dead or alive. He has accepted a most important position during this emergency, keeper of the town's morgue records. As he was personally familiar with the majority of the populace, survivors were relying on him to recognize the dead, notify the next of kin, and comfort the bereaved. He will exhaust himself at this gruesome task, coming close to death himself for lack of sleep and nourishment over the next week. His task is short-lived. As the decay envelops the dead, the bodies become more difficult to identify. His good friend and assistant, Reverend H.L. Chapman of Franklin Street Methodist Church, leans over Beale's shoulder to glimpse this corpse. Between the two men of God, there are few strangers in this town. Both have been worn down by constant dreary tales of survival and death, of daughters being wrenched from their loving embraces of their fathers, of wives who have seen their children carried downstream by debris, And then the inferno at the bridge, where coal from burning stoves and homes swept away by the deluge and deposited in great heaps at the great arched bridge. The huge blaze charred hundreds beyond recognition, both men on the verge of mental breakdowns. Beale remarks, another nameless corpse, mutilated beyond recognition. And he pulls the sheet over what remains, when he notices an object. The body has been pulled from the wreckage of trees, houses, rotting horses and cow carcasses, and even a derailed train piled high against the old stone bridge. After days in the water, then additional hours in this unseasonable heat, the body is badly deteriorated. But the sharp eye of Reverend Beale notices the simple ring. Of the hundreds of unknown dead registered, is there a chance that a gold band can identify this poor soul? Will this be just another of the more than 2,000 who will have inscribed on their tombstone, "Unknown Dead of the Johnstown Flood"? As Beale removes the ring, a simple inscription identifies this shattered body as Password 8. Johnstown, Historical Notes and Teaching Tips. America's industrialization during the latter decades of the 19th century far outpaced its ability to properly manage the exploitation of the land's rapidly diminishing resources. Cities' populations were exploding as immigrants arrived from overseas and impoverished rural farmers, who had given up hope in the farm market economy, migrated to urban areas to find work in the ever-expanding massive factories. Overcrowding, slum tenements, and inadequate wastewater and sewer systems were but a few of the deportations awaiting the urban poor. Only the privileged few enjoyed the benefits of the expanding capitalist system. Men like Carnegie, Rockefeller, Morgan, Frick, and Mellon reaped huge profits and lived like nobility, relishing in fanciful country clubs and expensive country estates. Few questioned the excesses of the wealthy until 3:10 p.m., May 31st, 1889. On that day, the South Fork Dam busted, and the American people paid the price for extravagances of the rich. That price was paid by the rotting corpses of the common man in the path of the great flood wave in the Little Conemaugh. The South Fork Hunting and Fishing Club had purchased the old Pennsylvania Railroad and Canal Company South Fork Dam, high in the mountains of western Pennsylvania. The picturesque mountain lake formed by the impressive dam was transformed into a heavenly resort for the filthy rich. The managers had altered the dam and transformed the land for the benefit of visitors. When the rain came, the dam was unable to hold the tremendous amount of floodwaters from the exploited landscapes above it. The dam busted, and a huge wave of water and debris descended on the working-class neighborhoods downstream, destroying all within its path. Nothing was spared. In a deep hole within the peaceful mountains of lay Johnstown, within 45 minutes, only wasteland remained. Who was at fault? Many pointed to the excessive behavior of the rich who owned the club at the dam. Some accused the capitalists who exploited the land without conservation efforts. A few lay blame on society itself for its rapid expansion without any central planning, seeking only the almighty dollar. Johnstown, inspired by a personal trip to the Johnstown Flood National Park, depicts the results measured in human costs of the most infamous and tragic natural catastrophe in American history. Key terms. Grand View Cemetery is the final resting place for many of the identified and unidentified victims of the Johnstown flood. Located on high ground, it is an eerie place to visit during a rainstorm. South Fork Dam was originally designed to supply water to the Pennsylvania Canal, reportedly the largest earthen dam in the Western Hemisphere. The dam was sold first to the railroad and then to the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club when it was altered to create a pleasant lake setting for the rich of Pittsburgh. The dam gave way at 3:10 p.m. May 31, 1889, leading to the Johnstown flood. Johnstown is located in the western Pennsylvania mountains and was the center of the great iron and steelmaking industry. The surrounding mountain provided the water power, timber and ore, and coal to supply the booming metal industry in the later decades of the 19th century. Cambria Iron and Steel Company was the industrial heart of Johnstown. Employing the majority of the populace, the company enjoyed a privileged position in the region. Its environmental excesses and lack of the basic conservation efforts would contribute to the catastrophe at Johnstown. Claire Barton mobilized the American Red Cross to tackle the logistics of relief during the weeks following the flood. The flood became its first of many major natural catastrophes. Reverend David Beale and H.L. Chaplin were local preachers who volunteered to identify the many victims of the Johnstown flood. They would enter many names in the town morgue journal in the days following the flood. The Great Arch Railway Bridge, or Old Stone Bridge, did not collapse under the weight of the flood wave. As debris piled against its stone pillars, stoves upset when many homes were uprooted from their foundations during the flood, started fires that turned the piles of wooden debris into the raging inferno at the bridge. Password 16.